Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 21st of April. Oh, we got a show for you today. Jim Lehrer is joining us the first part of this hour. He has a new novel. I think he does his novels in April because it was a year ago, just about now, that we talked to him about his previous novel. He's written 20 of them. He will be with us momentarily. Richard Clark is joining us the second part of this program. He has a new book, Cyber War, The Next Threat to National Security and What to Do About It. And then the second hour of our program, Anna Quinlan will be joining us. So we have some top-notch guests. We always do, but lots of great conversation ahead. Jim Lehrer is with us momentarily, executive editor and anchor of the NewsHour on PBS. His latest book is Super, a novel. He has been doing the news for a long time. He was a member of the Marine Corps. He was a reporter for the Dallas Morning News and then the Dallas Times-Herald, political columnist there for several years, and then city editor and then to public television in Dallas, where he was executive director of public affairs, on-air host, editor of a nightly news program, teamed up with Robert McNeil in 1973, and they did a long-running public broadcasting news program. They did the Senate Watergate hearings broadcast on PBS. Solo anchor Jim was for PBS coverage of the House Judiciary Committee's impeachment inquiry of Richard Nixon. He's covered so many important American events. In the last six presidential elections, Lehrer has served as a moderator for 11 of the nationally televised debates. He's the author of 20 novels, two memoirs, three plays. His latest novel is a story of celebrity and murder aboard the Santa Fe Railroad Super Chief, known as the Train of the Stars during Hollywood's heyday, and it features, among others, Clark Gable and Harry Truman. And he has a fascination with the days of railroad travel and also with buses, and we're so happy to have Jim with us. Our number, if you'd like to talk with him, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And the email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Jim Lehrer, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Great. I have a fascination with railroads, too, because my ancestors, you know, the Irish bunch, built a lot of the railroads and then served as railroad conductors. And I love this mode of transportation. But I didn't know very much about this Santa Fe thing where a lot of celebrities and probably a lot of intrigue took place. When did you get fascinated with it?
Well, I've been fascinated with trains since I grew up in Kansas. My dad worked for a bus company called Santa Fe Trailways, which was owned by the Santa Fe Railroad, and I became fascinated then because these big silver streaks would come through Kansas on the way to the west or back to the east, and of course we never were able to get on the trains, but it was always kind of the magic carpet, the magic waiting there for to take me away. And anyhow, it's been in my head, and I've been a big bus fan before that, and So I've always been interested in this, in the train and the Super Chief in particular. So I decided, well, what the hell? Let me write a novel about it.
Why not? Now, what's this thing with your novels all being published in April? Is there something about this month?
No. Well, that's a good question. I don't know why these things. The scheduling of novels or of books is usually, you know, they don't want anything to come out. You can only do one a year. And I think they just started the spring, and so, okay, well, we'll do the next one in the spring, and then the next one in the spring. So there, I don't think there was any magic or mythology to it. I think they just made that, Random House just made that decision.
I know you've read a lot of train books, and that you have read everything, you say, from Hitchcock's North by Northwest to Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express. Which one, other, of course, than yours, which has just been published, is the best?
Well, North by Northwest is my favorite train movie of all time. It's just a superb movie, period. But it's got everything, all of the above and all of the below. It's all right there on that, in that movie.
Hmm. You have Harry Truman on this train and Clark Gable. Let's start with Harry Truman. I was wondering as I was reading it if you were troubled by the fact that Harry Truman didn't seem to think twice about the decision to drop the atomic bomb or do nuclear testing. He just sort of doesn't examine that very thoroughly and the possibility of the effects that it may have on people. Did that get lodged in your brain somehow, Jim, and you decided to put it in a book?
Well, it did get lodged in my brain. He always, in his memoirs and every conversation he had, he never had any second thoughts about the decision to drop the atomic bomb. It was a very simple question to him. It was either it was to save a million lives, to kill. You know, it was just a trade-off. To stop the war. We had to stop the war in order to avoid the invasion of the mainland, where a million people would have died, Americans as well as Japanese. And that was his, and he went to his grave that way. However, on nuclear testing, he did have some, not second thoughts about that, but he realized what he had done. Not he, but many, he and others, by just doing the atomic bomb, what it did was open up nuclear, all things nuclear, into the world where it still remains. He did know that. And the nuclear testing thing did bother him, particularly out in Utah and where people were dying as a result of the testing and all of that. But he was no longer president, and he didn't really do much about it. But he had no second thoughts at all about dropping the bomb itself.
Mm-hmm. He's been getting a lot of attention lately. It seems as though we examine presidents every now and then, and it's been Harry Truman's turn for reexamination, his being perhaps a better president than many thought when he was president. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. When he left office, he was, I don't remember the exact figure, but it was something like he had about a 22%.
Did he really?
Rating. Oh, yeah. I mean, he was considered... you know, the accidental president, who wasn't up to it by a lot of people. And it was only as time went by, after he left the Oval Office, after he left the presidency, that people began to examine this man and his presidency. And to a point now, he's considered one of the great presidents of all time.
Mm-hmm. So did you want to put him on the train right away? It's interesting you chose as the celebrities Clark Gable and Harry Truman.
Right. Well, Truman... I've always had a connection to Truman in my mind. I went to journalism school at the University of Missouri in Columbia, and in the 50s, and they have a daily newspaper in Columbia, Missouri, that called the Columbia Missourian, in fact, and it's staffed by students at the journalism school. And Harry Truman, then former president Harry Truman, was coming to the. He had a granddaughter who was a student at the University of Missouri, and he agreed to come and make a speech. And I was assigned to cover the speech, which I was very excited about. And after the speech, I went to him and I said, you know, I'm Jimmy Charles Wawa, and I'm here for the Columbia Missourian. And he handed me his speech, which was in a binder. And he said, here, you want the speech? And I said, yes, sir, that'd be great. And, of course, I opened it and it had big print because, you know, he had bad eyesight always, and he had big print in the binder. But then he said to me, more importantly, he said, walk with me to the car if you want to chat. And I said, yes, sir. I walked with him to the car, you know, a block or so. And there were no aides with him or anything like that. There was somebody there who took him home, back to Independence. And but it was, I've never forgot that. And so it just became a natural act for me to put him in my book.
Isn't that a story?
Yeah.
That's a great story. And how about Clark Gable? I always think of that Judy Garland song, You Made Me Love You.
Well, Clark Gable, I've always been fascinated by him for a couple of reasons. First of all, he really was the champion super chief passenger of these stars, these movie stars who would travel on the train, and particularly the super chief. He really loved going on the train, and particularly after his first wife Carol Lombard died in a plane crash, it would focus his mind even more on the idea of staying off airplanes. Even though in World War II he had been he'd been in the Air Force, or the what was then called the U.S. Army Air Force, and he was a big flyer then. But after that, after Carol Lombard died, he just rode the train, and particularly the super chief. And he was a man, a great womanizer, and a great drinker. and he did a lot of that on the Super Chief. I mean, that's factual. So that it was a natural thing here to put him on the Super Chief when it came time to write the book.
Did he actually have some of the people who worked on the train find young women for him and then have them brought in, sometimes than a couple?
I kind of made that up. But I think I made it up out of reality. it seemed like a natural thing for him to do.
And then, of course, there's the question, is it really Clark Gable on the train?
Yeah, right. Yep. Right. Well, we can't talk about that.
No, we can't talk about that.
No.
We're going to welcome phone calls for you. We have many people, and our time is limited with Jim Lehrer, executive editor, anchor of the NewsHour, has a new novel, Super, a novel, and a great read it is. I read it over the last couple of days. Let's go to Jerry from Madison for our first call. Hi, Jerry.
Oh, good morning, Kathleen. I wanted to get your guest take on Douglas MacArthur. I know that you were talking about President Truman earlier, and he ended up relieving MacArthur of his command because of his inability to, submit to the commander-in-chief. And I've talked to a lot of former Marines over the years. Some were in the Pacific Campaign in World War II, and some were in Korea, and they're divided on whether MacArthur was a hero or a villain. Now, get your guess.
Okay, Jim.
Take on that.
Well, that's absolutely true. When I was in the Marines in the 1950s, MacArthur was not a magic name. They still talked about him as in villain terms, that he was a showboat and used the Marines as cannon fodder. He was not a treasured person in the memories of U.S. Marines then. I don't know how they feel about him now, present day Marines, but that was certainly the case back then.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking as I was reading your resume, which is just so exhaustive, Jim, how you've been present for so many events in American history. Isn't that something? Do you think about that every now and then? All that you've covered, all we've been through since you started reporting.
Oh, Kathleen, I think about it all the time. I'm just so fortunate. It is a glorious thing. I tell people all the time that journalism is basically little boy, little girl work. It's chasing fire engines. You hear the siren, you go. And I've been chasing the fire engines of news for 50 years. And those fire engines, sometimes it's. For instance, I was in Dallas as a reporter when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and all the stories that I have covered nationally and internationally since I've been in television, in public television, it's just extraordinary. And I've been a witness, kind of born witness, maybe not eyewitness all the time, but I've been present as a journalist for all the major events of the last 40-plus years, and that is, I'm just so fortunate. And I feel fortunate for this, having been able to do that.
Yes, I'm sure you must. And we have been through such historic times just recently, haven't we? The election of an African-American president in this country is quite historic.
Well, it is, particularly for somebody my age, to look back and if somebody had said to me, and when I began in 1959 as a newspaper reporter, that someday an African American would be elected president of the United States, nobody would have paid any attention to that. That wouldn't even been conceivable. But now it's happened. But there are all kinds of things like jet planes. I mean, you just go through the whole list of things that have happened in my lifetime that are extraordinary. And to have been part, as I say, to be present when all these things happened is just wonderful.
We welcome more phone calls. Jim Lehrer is our guest this hour, first half hour. Richard Clark is the second half hour. Jim is executive editor, of course, and anchor of the NewsHour on PBS and has been giving us thoughtful, complete news for a long time now. He did cover, as you heard him just say, the assassination of President John Kennedy, has been covered and moderated many of the nationally televised presidential debates, covered Watergate, you name it, he's covered it during our lifetimes. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address, should you care to send one of those, is talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Richard Clark joins us the second half hour of this show. His latest book is Cyber War, The Next Threat to National Security and What to Do About It. Anna Quinlan has a new novel, and she joins us the second hour of the program. Jim Lehrer is here now to talk a little bit about the news, but a good portion of our interview about his new book, Super, a novel, which is a great read about a train. He's always been fascinated by train. The Santa Fe trains were sleek dream machines, he says. It was the train that was going to take you places. I always wanted to ride one, but I never did. And he puts Harry Truman and Clark Gable on the train as well. Join us. We have a few more minutes with him. Rick from Milwaukee. Hello, Rick.
Good morning to you and Mr. Lehrer. I'd like to make a couple points as briefly as possible. First, just for fun, I went to the Rosebud Theater last Thursday, and I saw North by Northwest for the first time in my life.
Oh, really?
What a terrific movie. And how subtle Hitchcock was. Toward the end of the movie, I saw one of the two nasty people holding a cigarette, you know, like some kind of Nazi officer, and then it clicked. Soviet KGB. That's what the whole movie was about.
That's right. Did you like the movie as much as I did?
Oh, I was just spellbound by it.
That's great.
And Eva Marie Saint, holy mackerel. But seriously, my undergraduate degree is in economics from UW-Madison, and I just wanted to help you as a journalist understand this financial debacle we have here. It's not that difficult to understand. It's simply a massive bubble in the housing industry that burst. And this is something well within the purview of the Federal Reserve. And the Fed just completely muffed this. You know, they had two big bubbles before this. They should have done something about the dot-com bubble and the other one in Wall Street. So they should have been well prepared for the housing bubble. They've got hundreds of economists, professionals working there. I'm sure they knew about it. This is all the fault mainly of Alan Greenspan.
All right, I'm going to hold you there because we have limited time, Rick, and it's a huge topic. Jim?
Yeah, well, I hear what he's saying. You know, there are differing views about that. And, you know, his point is a lot of people agree with what he just said about the Fed. I am not... I don't know enough to pass that kind of judgment.
Mm-hmm. What about this as a story? Is this a difficult, because it does seem to be the derivative thing and the hedge funds and all of that. I find this, and shame on me, I should probably know more about economics, but it seems to be a fairly difficult in a time when we want to simplify stories, but good journalism should also make us understand all of these. Is it a hard one to cover, Jim?
It is hard to cover, and yet in some ways it's getting easier and easier to cover because it's so real. Mm. In other words, this it's a very complicated derivative. The derivative is a very complicated situation. Subprime mortgages, a very complicated thing and hard to explain. And yet it affects those words and what they represent. Are part of the crisis that helped at least generate the crisis. So people are paying more attention than they otherwise would to those kinds of words and those kinds of instruments and all those kinds of things that are part of the financial world. And you still have to start with A before you can go to B, C, and D. And for those of us in journalism, it is certainly difficult, but it has to be done. Because people really do want to know what these things are about.
Right.
And what happened.
Yeah, and what happened to our money.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Thanks, Rick, for the call. Kate is next from De Pere. Hi, Kate.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Kate.
I have a dinner menu from the Santa Fe dining car service from 1942.
Oh.
My dad was in the Air Force in San Antonio. And I'm supposing he rode this Fred Harvey car. And on the menu, it says sirloin for one, $1.90.
boy.
So these are a whole dinner menu, and it's really kind of fun because I had just taken out a file on my father's war records, and this one had come up, and I was looking at all the menu items. So this is rather kind of fun to hear you talk about the Santa Fe Railroad.
Well, the Fred Harvey Company, you know, they provided all the food aboard the Santa Fe trains and also in the Santa Fe terminals. They were they had the Harvey girls who were the waitresses who came from all over the country to work in the West and to find husbands and do other things. And anyhow, it was a terrific story about those early Santa Fe trains and the people who worked on them and rode on them.
Yes, they are. Thank you, Kate. You'll enjoy Jim's new book, no doubt.
Well, I certainly will. Thank you.
Thanks very much. A few comments on this incredible gridlock we seem to have in Washington right now, Jim. It really is something. Everybody complains about it. You hear it, I'm sure, from your viewers, and we do from our listeners, that people are kind of tired of nobody sitting at the table and working for the benefit of all of us.
Yeah, I think the weariness is going to lead to probably it going away fairly soon because we always have to remember that the democratic society that we have is a real messy thing to watch. And when you have real problems, when the people have real problems like they have, whether or not their home is going to be foreclosed, whether or not you're going to lose your job and find another one, whether or not your children are going to be able to go to college, et cetera, these are all real problems. These are not academic exercises. These are not things that for think tanks. These are real people are suffering. And as a consequence, the people who represent them in Congress and elsewhere, in other words, the people in the government, they have to deal with real things. And so, everybody's looking for solutions, and everybody has a different kind of solution or a different solution altogether. And that causes divisions, and it raises the temperature because so much is at stake. But that has been true from the very beginning of this country, and it will always be that way. Right now, it's a little more divisive and a little more vitriolic in the exchanges and all of that. But it is part and parcel of what we Americans came to do in the 1770s, and we're still doing it.
Mm-hmm. One final question, because this is something that's been on my mind, and I was reading Anna Quinlan's. She's with us the next hour of the program to talk about her page-turning novel. You have one as well. She, as you know, gave up her column for Newsweek and was talking about doing an awards competition and looking at the young writers who were coming in and saying it was time for them for this generation to move on and other people take over. And I keep thinking I miss her writing so much. I think she's so clear, and I love what her body of work, and I was upset that she stopped. I think about your body of work and what you've seen and appreciate the fact and want to hear my news from somebody like you. What do you think about people like us? I'm a little younger than you, but not all that much, who have been in the business for a long time, deciding, well, it's time to leave to make way for other people versus all that you've seen and the fact that I, and I'm sure many others like me, want to hear what the world is all about from people like you.
Well, I think it takes both kinds. I've always said, and I believe it, that journalism age in journalism is a state of mind. Some of the oldest people I know in journalism are 23 years old. Some of the youngest people I know in journalism are 73 years old.
I like that.
And it's because it is little boy, little girl work. However, it takes real people of varying ages, it seems to me, in journalism to reflect the real world's of today, that somebody who has a younger view, but it also you also need frame of reference, and it's the old people like me who can supply that in journalism as well.
Well, I'm glad you're still there. Thanks for the novel. You're so prolific. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, the pleasure is always mine. Thank you so much, Kathy.
Yeah, our great pleasure. Jim Lehrer with us, the first part of this program. His new book, it's a novel, again published in April, is Super. And it's a great story. He puts Harry Truman and Clark Gable on a train that carries them from Chicago to Los Angeles. The train, the Santa Fe Railroad's famous super chief that was always filled with wealth and great celebrity. It became known as the Train of the Stars. Jim, always fascinated by that train, and puts together a heck of a story with those characters. And And now, don't you love it when one show leads to another thought? I have to get North by Northwest, too. I haven't seen that movie in years. I met Alfred Hitchcock once when I was working at WGN in Chicago, and he scared the heck out of me. I just looked at him and went, "Ooh, you scare me, sir." So that's that. All right, we're moving on.